Hello, Beat Check listeners. I'm Shane Dixon Cavanaugh, Portland City Hall reporter with the Oregonian Oregon Live, and your host this week. In February, elected leaders of a small town in Marion County took the extraordinary step of firing its top cop amid a series of troubling allegations. Jervis Police Chief Mark Chase's removal has since touched off a feud between the chief's defenders and officials in the quiet community about 15 miles northeast of Salem. Chase, as it turns out, is no stranger to controversy on the job. Leaders in Junction City, about an hour south of Jervis, fired Chase from his role as police chief there in 2016. Joining me today to talk about this story is Oregonian Oregon Live reporter Catalina Gaitan. Kata has covered protests, policing, and Portland's ongoing struggle with gun violence and homicides at her paper since 2020. They have also traveled around the state and reported numerous stories that examine small-town politics in the age of toxic divides, all of which I highly recommend and will include in the show notes. So Kata, it's a treat to chat with you. Thanks for being here, and I hope you're having a positive day thus far.
I'm having a great day, especially since we get to chat. It's always fun.
I agree. So help our listeners learn a little bit more about you and your interests as a reporter at the Oregonian. And I would love to start by you telling us a bit more about how you got interested in sort of going around the state to smaller communities that are often undercovered by local news. And what you found in those places.
Sure. It kind of started all with a story tip. I got an email in my newsroom inbox from someone who was writing from the city of Gladstone, which is about 20 minutes away from Portland. And this person was the owner of a small coffee shop. She's queer, and she was basically asking for help. She was saying that her business had been repeatedly targeted by people she described as being members of the far right, people stealing her Black Lives Matter flags, rocks being thrown through her business's windows, events of hers being protested. And she felt like Gladstone's police force, city officials weren't really paying attention. And so her sending in that story tip was, I think, kind of a last cry for help. And I had spent, you know, the last year and a half covering protests where it felt very much split between left and what you would say is like left and right. And I felt like I could kind of do that story tip justice. So I drove out to Gladstone and I started, you know, getting her surveillance footage from her business and getting emails, looking at old social media posts. And, you know, many, many years ago, each small town, I feel like, used to have its own independent newspaper. So these things would have been covered already, probably by a smaller newspaper than the Oregonian. But because so few local small newspapers exist today, it's kind of like there's all of these untold stories in small towns where you go to them and it's kind of like lifting up a rock and realizing there's so many worms underneath. And for this business owner, she'd been having issues for years, and this sort of drama had been unfolding for years. And so it took a lot of time to tease out, you know, different people's perspectives and narratives and what, you know, people on either side of this issue had felt they'd experienced. And ultimately, we ran a story. It ended up being a front page story about, it wasn't just about this small business being what she felt like was being targeted, but also about how this left and right divide was playing out politically in what is, you know, kind of a suburb of Portland, which is seen as extremely left. So it was just a fascinating story to report. And ultimately, it made me realize that, one, local newspapers, I wish there were more of them. They should exist. But also, as much as we can at the Oregonian, we should be going out to towns and cities and communities all over Oregon, because there's these fascinating stories that are happening that say so much about, you know, things that are happening around the U.S. and the world, like politically, socially, transformations that are occurring, difficulties with that transformation, just so much. It's fascinating. So that's a long-winded answer. There you go.
It's a great answer. And yeah, before we get into your work in Jervis, you know, the other story that comes to mind for me is when you spent a bit of time down in southern Oregon on the coast in Brookings. And yeah, tell our listeners briefly just about what you were looking at down there and what you found. And you had an update on that story just recently.
Yes, I did. That was another very interesting story to report. I believe this also came from a story tip. Someone wrote in asking for help again because the city manager of this small town called Brookings, it's only a few miles away from the Oregon-California border on the coast. The city manager, who is in charge of the city's, you know, $60+ million budget, had been cited for shoplifting at the local Fred Meyers. And that Fred Meyers is kitty corner from City Hall, where the city manager's office was. They were saying, you know, she was on leave while they investigated it, but ultimately the city council voted to restore her to work, send her back to work. I think she was on paid administrative leave as well. And she was the highest paid employee in the city of Brookings. Mm-hmm. So I filed some records requests because I knew that there was an investigation into what had happened. And what I found was documentation by that Fred Meyer that they had been surveilling her for, I think, 90 days and had documented, I think it was 15 separate incidents of where they alleged that she had shoplifted. And it was either a few dollars at a time, but one time it was something as expensive as a blender. And she, according to this Fred Meyer documentation, she allegedly would scan a few items and then just kind of not scan a few others. So she left one day, it was the 4th of July a couple years ago, and the Fred Meyer loss prevention employee called the Brookings Police Department and said, it's time to arrest her or cite her. A police officer showed up and asked to see inside her car. She showed him her trunk. There was nothing in there. Then he asked to see the back seat. She opened up the back door, and what Fred Meyers had said she had stolen was a roll of toilet paper and a veggie tray. And there was a blanket in her back seat covering objects, an object that appeared to be the size and shape of a package of toilet paper rolls. But she refused to lift up the blanket, and so the officer cited her for third-degree theft. Ultimately, she pleaded no contest to that charge, and she was able to return to work. But it caused, you know, this is a small community. Everyone knows everyone. And there were plenty of folks who felt it was unfair that someone with so much power was able to get away with something, is what they described it as. And even a police officer resigned in protest, quit his job, because he was like, how am I supposed to enforce the law when the highest paid employee in the city doesn't have to abide by the same laws we do? So after a lot of protests at city council meetings, angry letters, ultimately, much later, the city separated with Janelle Howard, that city manager, and paid her about $170,000 in settlement money. So that was also the second time she had been fired as the city manager of a city in Oregon, which is similar to what has happened in the story we're about to talk about.
Yeah. And this time around, though, it's about a police chief here in Oregon who has now been fired, not by one, but by two towns in this state. The most recent one being in Jervis in Marion County. So set the scene for us a little bit. What the heck is going on in Jervis right now?
Yes, I think one of the first things people should understand about Jervis is that it is tiny. It is less than a square mile. It's a few blocks one direction, like 10 blocks the other direction. It has about 2,700 people. I mean, this community is tiny. There's really just one big store, the Dollar General, I think. And I talked to one city council member. You know, all city employees were told by the interim city manager to not talk about this issue with the police chief. But this counselor, Rob Ladd, agreed to speak with me outside his auto repair shop. And he said he was born and raised in Jervis, lived there his whole life. And he's like, everyone knows everyone. And he likes it that way. But it means when something like this happens, there is nowhere to hide, you know? It can take over your life if you're involved in something like this. So it seemed like everyone involved, whether it's the police chief, his employees, current and former, the city council members, the mayor, they're all experiencing this intense sort of feud because there are folks who don't believe it was fair that Mark Chase was fired and believe that the investigation that led to his firing was flawed and one-sided. And then there's the city council who read through this 100-page investigative report and agreed or voted that it was in the city's best interest to fire him.
Well, tell me a little bit more about Mark Chase's time as police chief in Jervis, based on what you uncovered in that report and then in your subsequent reporting and interviews.
Sure. So specifically, I mean, to tell the story of Jervis, you kind of have to time travel when it comes to Mark Chase. Mark Chase is 58, but he's had a nearly 40-year career in law enforcement. So he was hired by the Dallas Police Department in 1987. A dozen years later, he was transferred to the Salem Police Department and promoted to sergeant in 2000. And 9 years later, Junction City hired him to be their police chief. And
for listeners who aren't quite sure where Junction City is, that's just north of Eugene, right off of I-5. Or, you know, it's on Highway 99 specifically, but in Lane County. So
yes. And there didn't seem to be any public rumblings of issues with Chase's performance as police chief in Junction City until July 2014. And that's when Junction City's then city administrator placed him on paid administrative leave because 9 officers had complained about his management and communication techniques. And this was reported by the Register Guard in Eugene at the time. So Chase returned to work 7 months later, but he actually sued the city of Junction City and the city administrator in federal court for $300,000, alleging that the city administrator had discriminated against him for his religious beliefs and put him on leave without due process. But a federal judge dismissed that case a year later, so he did not win that case. Then in April 2016, a new Junction City administrator ended up firing Chase because Chase had delayed telling city officials that his police firearm, a Glock 21, had been missing. It had gone missing. Yeah. Couldn't find it. And that once they found out that the gun was missing, the administrator did a performance review of Chase and uncovered a few concerning things. So this is all coming from the Register Guard still. Chase allegedly went into a middle school classroom full of Latino children in uniform and yelled, "Put your hands up," in Spanish. And the teacher complained to the city that Chase's unannounced visit had really scared the children. And in another instance, Chase had allegedly asked a candidate to be a reserve officer if he was married, and reportedly dramatically changed his tone after the man told him he was gay. So Chase was fired, and he decided to start over in Jervis. They hired him as a police officer in 2016. So he started at the beginning, kind of back where he started when he first began his law enforcement career. He worked his way up to lieutenant in 2017, and the city made him the police chief in 2019.
Now, Kata, so, if I recall correctly from your story, the Jervis Police Department has how many cops? Seven?
Yeah. When Mark Chase was there, it was a tiny police force of seven people. Now it's even smaller. But keep in mind, there's, I think, 13 city employees for the city of Jervis total. It's minuscule. So when something like this happens, it's almost half of the city employees are embroiled in something if it involves the police department. So what happened in Jervis, he was made chief in 2019. Things seemed publicly okay until October 2023. And that's when one current and two former Jervis police employees complained to the city that they thought Chase had violated the city's policies around harassment, discrimination, and retaliation. And the city hired a Southern Oregon attorney to investigate the complaints. And this attorney, David Groff, spent 3 months doing interviews and reviewing documents. And he was interviewing the three former and current employees who complained, and former employees, a couple of former officers, and Mark Chase. And when it came to Mark Chase's interview, he spoke to the investigator for about an hour before his attorney recommended that he end the interview. And that's because the investigator told him the interview was voluntary and that he did not have to answer any questions if the answers might implicate him in a crime. So after about an hour, Chase stopped being interviewed and he never got to give his side of the story when it came to all of these allegations made against him. And these allegations are detailed in 101 pages of documentation by this investigator.
And what are some of those allegations that really jumped out at you?
The one that jumped out the most by far was an incident in mid-2022 when a Jervis police lieutenant was doing a training on how to disarm someone with a new hire. And they were in the police department's garage. And Mark Chase came in to observe, and this lieutenant was going to demonstrate this disarming technique with Chase for the new hire. And as the lieutenant stepped toward Chase, Chase pulled his police-issued gun and pointed it at the lieutenant's face, allegedly. That was something that the lieutenant said in the report had never happened to him before. He never had a loaded gun pointed at his face, and he said he never thought when it happened it would be by his chief. And that really stood out to me by far. So a few other ones. In 2021, one unidentified employee said he was reviewing body camera footage of after a Corvallis police officer had fatally shot a person, and he said, or the unidentified employee said, Chase turned to him and said, "If you ever get involved in a shooting, when he hits the ground, I want you to put five more in him so he's gone." And during a handcuffing exercise, Chase reportedly told one female officer, "Oh, you can search me anytime." When Chase and an unidentified female officer were responding to a call to a home, Chase allegedly told this female officer to pat down the male, even though, according to their policy, it's supposed to be women patting down women or men patting down men whenever possible, which this officer knew, but she didn't want to disobey the chief, so she patted down this man. And as she was doing it, Chase allegedly said to the man, "I bet you're enjoying this. This is the most action that you've gotten in a long time." And this reportedly prompted the man to say, quote, all kinds of nasty things to the female officer. And when they got back in the patrol car, Chase allegedly told that officer that he had made those comments that made her uncomfortable on purpose to see how she would handle the situation. There's a few more things. He allegedly wouldn't let a female officer work alone at night, saying it was for her safety, even though her male colleagues were allowed to work alone at night. Chase allegedly once fired his taser in the police department's locker room, and it barely missed hitting a person, and it left a hole in the wall. And the person who reported that to the investigator said that the mark is still there in the wall and that they've talked about framing it. And again, in 2023, there's this other incident where Chase allegedly walked into a Jervis classroom where 80% of the students were Latino and ordered them to put their hands up. And there was generally a sense from a few people reported that Chase had kind of, quote, a bad side, and you knew if you were a favorite or not a favorite, and it shifted all the time. And someone summed it up really well. They called Chase a boulder coming down a hill, and you were just trying to dodge out of his way. And I think from reading through this 100-page report, it created an environment where some employees did not want to come to work. It was not a healthy work environment for them.
And so you mentioned earlier that during the course of this outside investigation, Chase ultimately did not end up participating, he stopped speaking to the investigator after an hour. But you had the chance to speak with former Chief Chase. What did he say? What did he tell you when you brought all of this to him?
First, Chase denied most of the allegations in the report. He said most of them were either never happened or were described inaccurately by the people who reported them to the investigator. One interesting thing is that he said that the incident with the loaded gun did happen, but he said that the lieutenant was responsible for making sure that anyone in that room had removed their weapons and had been patted down. And he said it was really the lieutenant's fault for letting me be in there with a firearm, because he should have had me remove it and patted me down, and that lieutenant should have been fired for that. He said, if I'm getting fired, that lieutenant should too. He also said, and this is a quote, being a chief is a tough job. I'm not the best in the world. I'm not the worst. I'm somewhere in between. And he said, I feel this investigation and the direction of this started off with some unethical and willful intent to come to a conclusion and not be a fact-finding mission. And that was generally in our conversation what he said. This investigation only interviewed former employees or employees who had filed complaints about him to the city. And it didn't interview any current employees who might have had a more favorable experience with Chase and maybe defended him or maybe set the record straight on a few of these incidents that he said were inaccurately described or never happened. And he said he was not sure if he would sue the city of Jervis over this, but he's never going to be a police chief again, he said. He's actually done with policing, and he is most interested in helping babysit his two grandkids in South Salem. So it's an end of a long journey for him in law enforcement after some big, big ups from being made police chief and big downs from getting fired twice.
Right. And just the last thing here, Kata. So the mayor and city council of Jervis moved to fire Chase as police chief just back in February. So relatively recently. But just within those few weeks, a lot has happened in the aftermath. And just talk about that briefly, because I know we don't have too much more time.
Yes, there's a batch of folks, some live in Jervis, some live outside of Jervis, who were very upset about Chase's firing because they said, this investigation was really one-sided and Chase is this really positive fixture in the community. Kids love him. He goes to community events. He really helps put a positive face on law enforcement is what one person told me. And people believe that the city council unjustly fired Chief Chase. And because of that, it's led to a small group of people starting to collect signatures to recall the mayor and all but one city council member who voted in favor of firing Chase. So that would go to a special election vote, which would cost the city of Jervis thousands of dollars. But for some people, the issue is important enough. The firing of Chief Chase is so egregious that it would require basically a cleaning house of this small city's government. And it's really up in the air what could happen. But they need, since the city's so small, they only need 108 signatures for it to move to a vote or get on a ballot. And obviously, it would have to be certified and looked over to make sure that, everything there is, kosher. But that's how strongly people feel about this, that it's worth getting rid of almost everyone on their local government and starting fresh.
Oh my goodness. Because,
yeah. So big changes could come to the city of Jervis.
Yeah. So that community is just in the eye of the storm right now.
Yeah, but you know what? I went down a couple times and I drove around, I walked around, I went into the bar next door to City Hall, I talked to folks, and most of the folks didn't know this was going on. It really has been concentrated within a few of, former Chief Chase's most vocal supporters and the city's elected officials and its tiny police force. So, but if you're an everyday citizen of Jervis, you might not really be aware that this is all going on. So it's really just a drama unfolding within a small kind of sleepy town that you might not expect.
Well, it was an excellent story and I greatly enjoyed reading it. And I think our listeners and audience will enjoy it too. So folks, please, when you get a chance, go back to the show notes, take a look at Kata's most recent story here. And please also, their reporting on Gladstone and Brookings too are well worth your time. And Kata, thanks so much for hanging out with me for a little while today and talking about your work. Great fan and admirer, of course.
Thank you, Shane. Ditto times 1,000, infinity forever.
Thanks so much for listening to Beat Check with the Oregonian. If you like this show, give us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show. And tell a friend. Help spread the word. The best way to support our journalism and stories like this one is with a subscription to the Oregonian Oregon Live. You can do that at oregonlive.com/podsupport. Until next time.